All right, so here's a question. Did anybody read ahead? Read chapter 3? What? Nehemiah has a couple of chapters in it that are basically lists. So this is one of them. And you'd be tempted when you read Nehemiah chapter 3 to think that, well, this is just some boring stuff, but actually, I think it's worth us taking some time and looking at chapter 3. It is basically a list. It's a list of all of those who helped, who labored to join together in the reconstruction of the wall around Jerusalem. Now, this was going to be an enormous project. If you've been with us so far, back in the book of Ezra, Ezra was about rebuilding the temple. It carries right on into the book of Nehemiah. Nehemiah is about rebuilding the walls of the city. A city without walls was defenseless. We compare it to a city without a police force. A city without a police force, it's a dangerous place to live, especially roaming thugs, gangs, marauders. And enemies, you know, Jerusalem was surrounded by enemies. They didn't want the Jews coming back. They didn't want them rebuilding the city at all. So here's a huge project. Nehemiah has come to Jerusalem to rebuild the walls. These walls have been torn down and scattered all over since the time of Nebuchadnezzar, 586 B.C. It's now 444, 445 B.C., so 140 years have passed. The walls have been destroyed. They are piles of rubble, debris. There's giant stones. There's rocks. It's just scattered all over. I want you to also imagine 140 years. How much shrub and brush and trees and stuff has grown all around this rubble and debris. It's going to be an enormous job just to clear all that away. And then to, timber, all the timber that he arranged to get there would have to be brought in and stacked. And then the reconstruction of the walls could begin. It would be a massive project. In chapter 3, he talks about rebuilding 10 gates around the city. Nehemiah's walls would have 10 gates. Modern Jerusalem, I think, has 8, and one of them is permanently sealed, the East Gate. But in Nehemiah's day, there would be 10 gates. In chapter 3, he speaks of rebuilding 4 towers. These would be big stone towers, you know, that gave them an opportunity to overlook any approaching enemies, you know, watchtower type things, big, tall watchtowers. This chapter, you see, will employ 40 different work crews. 40 different crews that were going to be put to work rebuilding the 10 gates, the 4 towers. The walls will average 8 feet thick and 40 feet high. That's the average. They're about 39 point something. I just round everything off. But say 40 feet tall walls. That's a pretty tall wall. And 8 feet thick. In some places, like Nehemiah verse 8, I think it's verse 80, chapter 3, verse 80, talks about the broad wall. That would be a section of wall that King Hezekiah had built a couple hundred years before. And then the circumference of the city. Now, they're going to lay wall around the entire circumference, 2.5 miles. So you might think 2.5 miles is not a lot, but 2.5 miles of wall, 40 feet high, 8 feet thick, including towers, and 10 gates. Now, the gates, they had to be massive because they would have to swing in and out. They'd have to be gigantic in and of themselves. This would be a massive undertaking. And the walls that Nehemiah was going to construct here would basically follow the footprint of the walls that Solomon had built. It would follow that same footprint. Because the footprint of Jerusalem's walls has changed many, many, many times. Way back when King David first captured that city. King David captured the city, was called Jebus. And he captured, it was called the Stronghold of Zion. He captured that city. When he came up against the people who lived in Jebus, who were called Jebusites, which were, you know, people of the Canaanites, they were the pagan city. It was called the Stronghold of Zion. It was a huge fortification. And when David threatened to attack the Jebusite city, Stronghold of Zion, they said, all we need to defend ourselves from you is our blind men and our lame men. That's all we need to defend ourselves, because this city is impregnable. You're never going to defeat this city. So David defeated the city pretty quickly, captured it, and refortified it, and called it the City of David. Later became Jerusalem. And after David's death, Solomon became king. Solomon expanded the footprint of Jerusalem. He expanded it by adding the Temple Mount, made it large. I'm going to show you a map in just a little while. He made it larger. And then after him, Hezekiah tremendously expanded it. And it would be expanded even further at the time of Christ by King Herod. But when Nehemiah rebuilt the walls, he didn't follow Hezekiah's footprint. He followed the footprint of King Solomon. So a whole lot of people are going to be involved in this project. I'm going to encourage you to read the whole chapter when you get at home. Take your time. You got a whole week to read the chapter. But a great diversity of Jews would be involved in rebuilding these walls. They'd all have to work side by side. They were from many, many different cities around Israel. There were some from Jericho, and we'll see Tekoa, Keilah. There were men from Zenoa and Mizpah and Beth Hakkarim. They were from all over. And there were all kinds of professions and occupations. There were Levites, there were priests, there were goldsmiths, temple servants, the Nethinim they called them. They had government officials, they had merchants, they had ointment makers, perfumers. You've got a whole bunch of different people that's going to be working on this project. And there were even women working on the walls, because verse 12, in chapter 3, verse 12, it says, next to him repaired Shallum, the son of Helohesh, the ruler of half of Jerusalem, he and his daughters. So his daughters are working alongside him. We can't imagine how heavy the work would be, moving stones, gigantic stones and rock and rubble and so forth. But everybody's pitching in. Everybody is zealous to get these walls built. Well, not everybody. Verse 5, if you'll look here with me, when it speaks of the Tekoites, now these people were working hard. They joined in. Tekoa was about 10 miles away. They worked, but notice what he says, but their nobles put not their necks to the work of their Lord. You know, there's always people who think menial labor is beneath them, you know, that they're too important for menial labor. That, hey, I'm noble. I'm a noble. I just had my nails manicured. I can't be working out there with stone and all that kind of stuff. But it's a shame. I'm sure the Tekoites were embarrassed about their leaders. But here's what I was thinking. I don't think I would want my name to be permanently recorded in the Bible as somebody who wouldn't do the work that was assigned to him. But here you have these noblemen who wouldn't join in. They wouldn't participate. They wouldn't help. But well, so here you got a great diverse group of people. They're from all over. They're from all over Israel. They're ready to work. They're eager to work. Nehemiah, if you remember in chapter 2, he made his midnight ride and he went and surveyed the whole circumference of the walls. He came out the valley gate and he rode counterclockwise around the walls. He went the whole circumference of the walls. He checked everything out. He made his plans. He knew how much had to be built. And he had to have a very organized mind because he planned. You've got all these sections of wall. He figured out he could assign groups to 40 different sections of wall. Some would just build wall. Some would have to build a wall and a tower. Some would have to build a piece of wall, a tower, and a gate. But he had it all figured out. There would be 40 assignments that he would pass out to repair all the walls, north wall, west wall, south wall, east wall, going in a counterclockwise fashion. Each group would be assigned a section of wall to rebuild. It's a complicated project, but this man, he had to be very, very, very organized. And I would have to think that a lot of these folks had never undertaken a project like this before. You got goldsmiths, you got Levites, you've got priests, I mean, you've got perfumers, apothecaries, I think the King James calls them, but you've got all these people, and they're going to be building walls. So it requires some supervision, but let me tell you a little bit about the genius of Nehemiah. Because you've got all these people building walls, you're going to have 40 separate crews all around the city. How do you think you can get them to each build to the best of their ability? And some are not just going to want to throw rock together and, you know, get done with the job. Here's what he did. And as you read this chapter, you're going to see that as much as was possible, he assigned sections of the wall to be built by the people who lived right there. So if you lived right in this section, you want to make sure that wall is thick and tall and sturdy right there. I mean, it's genius, really. You get people involved in building and doing what's really vitally important to them for their safety, for their families, and so forth. I think it was genius. So that's what he did, and each one would rebuild a section that was really important to them right by their house, and each one knew right where they had to work, and it would be the result would be it would make Jerusalem secure and safe, and the wall would be consistent all around. It wouldn't be sections that were weak and brittle. All of it would be consistent all the way around. So I divided the chapter into four sections because it falls into kind of these four sections. There will be assignments because what Nehemiah did, y'all have to forgive me. Nehemiah had what we'll call north wall assignments, all those who are assigned to work on a north wall, west wall assignments, the longest section of wall, south wall assignments, and then the east wall assignment. So four sections. The first section covers verses 1 through 5. Those are the north wall assignments. North wall assignments, verses 1 through 5. You'll see verse 1, Elishab is the high priest. He rose up with his brethren, the priest, and they built the sheep gate. Now the sheep gate, notice what it says. And they sanctified it, and set up the doors of it, even unto the tower of Mia. Mia, the tower of Mia. If you have a different version, it might say the tower of the hundred. They believe it was called the tower of Mia because it means a hundred. Probably because it was 100 steps up to the top of the tower, but some believe it's because it was 100 cubits tall. If it was 100 cubits tall, that would make it 150 feet tall. That'd be a mighty tall tower. I would suspect it was 100 steps. But the sheep, you know, he talks about the Tower of Mia, and they rebuilt that, and they're going west now. They're moving west, counterclockwise, all the way to the Tower of Hananel, which means God is gracious or God's mercy. The sheep gate was a very, very important gate. It's where all the sacrificial animals came in and out into the Temple Mount to be sacrificed. So it got its name that way as the sheep gate. One of the most important points in the walls, northwest corner of the wall. Next to them, by the way, they sanctified that section because that's where the sacrifices came through. It's the only section that they, you know, that they talk about that. Next to him built verse 2, the men of Jericho. Next to them built Zachar, the son of Imri. But the fish gate did the sons of Hassanah build, who also laid the beams and set up the doors and the locks and the bars. Next to them repaired Meremoth, the son of Urijah, and the son of Koz. And next to them Meshullam, the son of Berechiah. And then it's going to tell you who worked in each section. Of course, we already read verse 5. The noblemen of Tekoa didn't want to join in the work. The fish gate, interesting name, because that's where all the fish merchants came through into the city to sell, whether they were coming from the Mediterranean or whether they were coming from Sea of Galilee, but they would come through the fish gate and bring their wares, bring their fish into the city. So you've got north wall assignments, verses 1 through 5. The second section would be the west wall assignments. That would begin in verse 6 and take us to verse 12, where it speaks here of the old gate. The old gate, Jehoiada and Meshullam, and they laid the beams, set up the doors. The old gate, the archaeologists think, was actually a part of the ancient city of David. And that was still there. They called that the Old Gate. And then it tells you who worked right next to them. Next to them repaired Melatai, the Gibeonite, Jadon, the Moronathite, and the men of Gibeon and Mizpah to the throne of the governor on this side of the river. Next to him, verse 8, who repaired these others, they fortified Jerusalem all the way to the broad wall. The broad wall is a part of the gigantic wall that King Hezekiah built. When he expanded the walls, Hezekiah built this wall 23 feet thick. And they call that whole section there the broad wall, part of the western wall, the broad wall. They fortified it all the way to there. And then you've got those who are working all the way over to the Tower of the Furnaces, the King James says in verse 11, or some versions translate it the Tower of the Ovens, because it is believed that it was right alongside that section of wall that all of the baking was done, all the bakers and those who did all of that. And so there were always ovens lit over there. So the Tower of the Furnaces, all the way through verse 12. Then it talks about Shallum, who was working there, half ruler of Jerusalem. He was covered a whole district in Jerusalem, an important man, but he and his daughters worked there. Then you've got the south wall assignments. That's verses 13 and 14, beginning with the valley gate. If you remember in chapter 2, that's where Nehemiah came out when he made his survey in chapter 2. He came out the valley gate, went back in the valley gate on the western side. They built that, fortified it, all the way to the dung gate. And the dung gate, it's pretty much what it sounds like. It's where all the garbage and waste and such was carried out of the city. And it led down into the Valley of Hinnom, which the Valley of Hinnom was originally called Gi Ben Hinnom, but later kind of, you know how words pick up a different meaning, became Gehenna. And at the time of Christ, Gehenna, it went through the dung gate, went out into the garbage. It was in the valley of Gehenna, where the garbage was burned, and dead things were brought out there, dead animals, whatever. And there were always fires out there, and wherever there's dead, bloated things, there's always worms out there. And that's the illustration Jesus used when he talked about hell. They'll burn in Gehenna fire, where the fires never stop. They're always burning day and night. They just never stop. And where the worm never dies, because, you know, those maggots eat everything that's bloated and stinky. And so it's interesting also, this dung gate is mentioned by Jeremiah. He calls it the potsherd gate, I think. Broken pottery. All the trash went out through there. So that's the south wall assignments. Verse 14 talks about also who repaired the dung gate and the locks and the bars and so forth. The rest of the chapter, beginning in verse 14 all the way to verse 32, is actually the east wall assignments. And it speaks about all of these assignments. Shalom, verse 15, rebuilt the gate of the fountain. This would have been near the pool of Siloam. These are all east wall assignments. And then he built it, covered it, set up the doors, the locks, the bars, and so forth. All the way to the pool. All the way to the pool of, actually, Siloam. Excuse me, I just turned too many pages in my Bible. By the king's garden, next to the stairs that go down to the city of David. Then it tells you who worked next to him. Verse 16, down over against the sepulchres of David and the house of the mighty. This would have been the military headquarters over there. And then it talks about where the Levites worked and their brethren, and next to him, Ezer, verse 19, over against the going of the armory to the way the wall turns, and all the way to the house of Elishab the priest. Now, they're all working by the houses, by their own places, their own homes and abodes. That way, they are really have an incentive to build that wall and to build it well. But you'll notice it also talks about some of the other gates. We already talked about the fountain gate, verse 15. So it talks about the tower that comes from the king's high house. This was a tower probably near the former palace where David once lived. And the prison, talks about the court of the prison. The Nethinim, verse 26, dwelt in Ophel. This is a little town outside of Jerusalem. And they were the temple servants. They worked around the water gate. This was a gate that opened to the city's water supply, the Gihon Spring, the most important water supply for the whole city. And then the Tekoites repaired another place over against the Great Tower, even to the wall of Ophel. This would be on the side of the Temple Mount inside the old city. Then it speaks, verse 28, of the horse gate. And this gate is believed to have been near where Solomon kept his stables. You know, Solomon was famous for having, the 1,000 horses that and so forth. So this is believed to be near his stables. And then verse 29 speaks of the east gate, directly east of the temple. This east gate is closed now. It was sealed up by the Muslims when they conquered the city back, I think, 16th century AD. They conquered the city and they shut it up because they had heard of a prophecy that the Messiah was going to come through the east gate. And so they sealed it up so he couldn't get through there. And then they built a cemetery in front of it, a Muslim cemetery, and because they had some superstition that the Jews wouldn't go through there or whatever. So So you've got the East Gate, and then down, also in verse 29, the keeper of the East Gate, and we finally end up in verse 31 at the gate Mifkad. Mifkad. Now, if you've got a different version, it'll say maybe the gate of gathering or the gate of numbering, because it was at this gate. It might say inspection gate, but this is the gate where King David numbered Israel. Remember when he got Israel together and he numbered Israel. Do we have that? Yeah, we can show those. I got a few pictures of the city, of the gates, and I'm going to show them. You know, I don't usually do this, but I had to go buy a laser thing. But, yeah, it's actually a toy to make your cat chase it. I bought it at the Petco. The pictures. So 10 gates, I mean, that we read about here. The sheep gate, the fish gate, the old gate, the valley gate, dung gate, fountain gate, water gate, horse gate, east gate, Mikpad. 10 gates, 4 towers. Let's go to one of the other pictures and see. Okay. This is the layout of the city, that the walls that he built. They started here and worked their way this way, all the way around. Fish gate, the old gate. This is the big wall, Hezekiah's wall. Worked their way to the Tower of the Ovens. The valley gate, this is the gate that Nehemiah first came out of when he rode the circumference, building it all the way down, King's Garden, Pool of Siloam, Fountain Gate. This was the where the bend is they talked about, the Water Gate that led out to Gihon Spring, Horse Gate, East Gate, the Mustard Gate or Inspection Gate, back to here again. Show it on the other slide that I have. I think I had a different one there. Yeah, this doesn't, you can't see this too well, but this is the section of the wall that all of this is the Temple Mount built by Solomon. This is the footprint of the original city, City of David, and then Solomon expanded it. But this is what Nehemiah rebuilt, these walls. 2.5 miles in circumference. About, it would encapsulate, I think, about 220 acres, they figured. That's a good picture right there. That's the better one. In the time of Nehemiah. Now, you might think that this is just maybe interesting, but not all of that motivating. But I think it's interesting to see it, to think about it, to recognize what all they did. And here's something that you can think about also. You know, God is really not opposed to building walls. I know that the Democrats are, but God was not opposed to building walls. In fact, the walls served a great purpose. They keep people in, like in a prison, and they'll keep people out. Undesirables, criminals, terrorists, and so forth. If you don't have some sort of protection from evildoers, of course, we have to trust the Lord at all times, don't get me wrong. But in the ancient world in particular, a city without walls, what did Proverbs say? A man who has no control over his spirit is like a city broken down, like, and without walls. Yeah. So, also, it's important for us to see that Nehemiah didn't try to do everything himself. Yeah. This is basically a good outline of what it would look like. This section here was added by Solomon. So David's city was about like this. I don't think they... He might have added this wall around the Gihon Spring because that's their water supply right there. Hezekiah put a gigantic tunnel there that would feed the city. You can take tours and go through that tunnel. This was what Herod, King Herod, did. He made the city walls so much bigger, huge at the time of Christ. And then... Did we have Hezekiah's, what he did? Was that on there? Yeah, his Hezekiah's walls, where he built the big walls. And then I think, was there one more? That's Solomon's, yeah. Hezekiah, see how big the walls are now? See how much more expanded they are? This is Agrippa. He expanded it even further. So the walls have changed through the years dramatically, up, down, back, forth. City of Jerusalem has been conquered so many times, walls and so forth, expanded, shrunk. Do we have time for a 25-minute film? Let's go. Hey, I hope, hopefully you won't be bored with this. I thought it was very interesting. It's a history of Jerusalem's walls. I know this is a little different tonight, but I thought it would make for an interesting study. Hopefully it has. Do you need me to turn out any lights over here? Or no? Oh. Yeah. Can y'all see it? Do I need to darken this up here a little bit or no? We're good? Okay, cool. Good. Oh well.
Well, welcome to the Holy Land and the site of the walls of Jerusalem. So in this video, we're going to be taking you all around the walls of Jerusalem, the current walls, but we're also going to take you back in time, and we're going to show you the history of how the walls were during the times of the Canaanites, David, Solomon, after Solomon, Hezekiah, Nehemiah, the walls during the time of Christ, then the walls after the time of Christ, and then how they are today along with the gates. So I think you'll find this video very enlightening to show you what the walls were like all throughout the history. Also, as a special treat, during the second half of the video, we'll be looking at the current walls and gates of Old City Jerusalem. So follow along and enjoy this video of the walls of Jerusalem. Now the first walls of Jerusalem were built by the Canaanites some 5,000 years ago. So long before the Israelites entered the Promised Land, the Jebusites lived securely within the walls of Jerusalem. The city was blessed with natural valleys around it that made it easy to defend. The city walls and its fortress provided additional protection. The long history of Jerusalem began well before it was captured by King David and made into the capital of the people of Israel some 3,000 years ago. Archaeological findings indicate the existence of a settlement in Jerusalem in the 3rd millennium or 3,000 years before Christ. The first mention of the city in historical sources begins in the 2nd millennium BC, or once again 2,000 years before Christ. The location of the ancient Canaanite city of Jerusalem was chosen specifically for its natural protective qualities. The hill on which early Jerusalem was built has natural fortifications from three directions. The deep Kidron Valley from the east, or also known as the Valley of Jehoshaphat, and then to the west was the Hinnom Valley, also known as the Teropian Valley. And the lowland where the two valleys met to the south is down in the place located south of the city of Jerusalem, down in a deep valley which goes down to the Dead Sea. The only side that isn't naturally protected is the north, and this has been a problem that has accompanied ancient Jerusalem throughout its history, and is even mentioned in biblical passages, such as the words of Jeremiah, "And from the north shall come the evil," Jeremiah 1:14. During the time of the Israel conquest, initially the city of Jerusalem was captured, but not fully. And then when David came on the scene in about 1000 BC, then it was he who was able to conquer the city and enlarge it. God was with David and allowed him to capture Jerusalem from the Jebusites. Later, he built additional walls to fortify the city. The Gihon Spring was outside the city at this time, and the city became known as the City of David. Jerusalem's ancient water source was and always has been the Gihon Spring on the east side of the City of David in the Valley of Jehoshaphat, or the Kidron Valley. In 2 Samuel 5:6, God tells us about how David captured the city of Jerusalem from the Jebusites. "And the king and his men went to Jerusalem against the Jebusites, the inhabitants of the land, who said to David, 'You will not come up here, but the blind and the lame will ward you off,' thinking, 'David cannot come in here.'" So they were mocking David and said, "You will never take this city." "Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion," that is, the city of David. "And David said on that day, 'Whoever would strike the Jebusites, let him give up the water shaft to attack the lame and the blind, who are hated by David's soul. Therefore it is said, the blind and the lame shall not come into this house.' And David lived in the stronghold and called it the City of David. And David built the city all around from the Milo inward. And David became greater and greater, for the Lord, the God of hosts, was with him." So in this passage we see here that the Jebusites are mocking David, and then David comes up through the water shaft of the Gihon Spring and captures the city of Jerusalem from the Jebusites from within the city, coming up from underneath of the city. Right here is where it all began, my dear friends. This is where God's plan to establish the temple and his speaking to the people and residing in this special place of Jerusalem about 3,000 years ago. And it will be the place where Christ is going to reign during the millennial reign. And this is the place where the prophets and the priests have ministered from. But it all began in the city of David. Now you can see the southern stairs here, and you can see the temple mount platform. The city of David ran from just below, or even connecting to, the southern stairs there, running down along the ridge, down to the Hinnom Valley and where the Kidron Valley meet. In fact, down at the tip down there is where the Pool of Siloam is, and that would be the lower part of the city of David. You can see right here, there's this wall here, this ancient wall. It's believed that that's what Nehemiah fortified. There's a kind of a tower there. That's where a watch place was, a lookout was. So this is the city of David, and this is what David conquered about 3,000 years ago. Then after the time of David, then Solomon comes on the scene, and he adds to the walls of the city of Jerusalem. So David dies, and then Solomon built a temple on the threshing floor of Araunah, or Ornan, and he enlarged the Temple Mount platform and added walls from the city of David to the Temple Mount. So he enlarged, he built this temple platform, he built the temple, which was glorious, and then he enlarged the city walls so that it would encompass the city of David and the platform, the Temple Mount, where the new temple was that he had built. Around 700 BC, then Hezekiah enlarged the city of Jerusalem in a big way. What was happening was that the northern 10 tribes of Israel, the northern part of Israel, was falling to the Assyrians, as had been prophesied by God. He had sent them prophet after prophet after prophet, warning them, but they did not listen. So God fulfilled his word, the prophecies, and the Assyrians moved in and took over the north. As they were doing that, many people fled from the north and sought refuge in Jerusalem. And so they settled in what is called the western side of the city of Jerusalem. So when the Assyrians were getting closer and threatening to take Jerusalem and the southern part of the nation of Israel, which was called Judah, then Hezekiah went into a massive, quick, frenzied building program, and he built what was called Hezekiah's Broad Wall. It's named that because of how wide it is. It was built quick, and it encompassed the whole western side of the city of David and Jerusalem. So there was a massive expansion then under King Hezekiah. In 2 Chronicles 32:5, it says about Hezekiah, he set to work resolutely and built up the wall that was broken down. So he repaired what did exist and raised towers upon it. And outside it, he built another wall. So this is the expansion, talking about the expansion. And he strengthened the Milo in the city of David. He also made weapons and shields in abundance. So Hezekiah's new wall measured 22 feet wide, or about 7 meters wide, by about 25 feet high, or 8 meters high. It was a massive undertaking and measured around 2.5 miles in length, or about 4 kilometers. A portion of the wall was discovered in the 1970s by Israeli archaeologist Naaman Abigad and dated to the reign of King Hezekiah, which was about 716 to 687 BC. It was called Hezekiah's Broad Wall by archaeologists because of its width. Hezekiah also built a water tunnel in order to keep the water from the Gihon Spring inside the city walls so the Assyrians couldn't cut off the water supply. The curving tunnel is 583 yards, or about 533 meters long, and has a fall of exactly 12 inches, or 30 centimeters, between its two ends, the beginning and the lower part, which winds up down at the Pool of Siloam. It was chiseled from both ends to the middle at the same time, and it took the water from the Gihon Spring under the mountain to the Pool of Siloam below the city. Later, then Nehemiah rebuilt the city walls of Jerusalem. So when the Babylonians conquered and destroyed Jerusalem in 586 BC, they also destroyed the walls and burned the gates with fire. However, God sovereignly moved in the heart of Artaxerxes, the king of Persia, to allow Nehemiah to rebuild the walls later on. It says in Nehemiah 1, "Now it happened in the month of Chislev, in the 20th year, as I was in Susa, the citadel, that Hanani, one of my brothers, came with certain men from Judah." So Nehemiah was in Babylon, and his brothers came to him and reported the news of what was happening in Jerusalem. And they said, "The remnant there in the province who survived the exile is in great trouble and shame. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates are destroyed by fire." So Nehemiah rebuilds this wall, and it was a massive, amazing miracle. It says in Nehemiah 6:15, "So the wall was finished on the 25th day of the month of Elul in 52 days. And when all our enemies heard of it, all the nations around us were afraid and fell greatly in their own esteem, for they perceived that this work had been accomplished by the help of our Lord." Nehemiah didn't change the existing walls of Hezekiah, but just repaired those that existed. Some 275 years after Nehemiah, there was a Hasmonean wall addition. The Jews gained their independence from the Seleucid Empire in around 167 BC, and they gained it under the Maccabeans and the Hasmoneans. At this time, Jerusalem began to be rebuilt along with its walls. During this period, a wall was added to the northern part of the existing wall. It would be this city layout that would exist during the time of Christ. In 63 BC, the Romans conquered the Jews and made several major changes in Jerusalem. Herod the Great enlarged the Temple Mount to its current size. The Antonia Fortress was also built that was beside the Temple Mount for protection purposes. And the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which is the believed place where Christ was crucified, buried, and rose again, was located outside the city walls at this time. From 37 to 70 AD, the walls of Jerusalem swelled to the north. So Herod Agrippa I laid the foundation for an expansion of the walls of Jerusalem to the north. Agrippa I began the construction of an additional wall of the city, which was completed at the beginning of the first Jewish-Roman War in 66 AD. This would be the largest area the city walls would ever encompass in Jerusalem's history. In 70 AD, the Jews revolted against the Romans, and the city and the temple were burned and leveled. This fulfilled Christ's prophecy regarding the destruction of Jerusalem because of the Jews' rejection of Christ as their Messiah. Later, in around 132 AD, the Jews revolted again against the Romans. Hadrian, the Roman emperor, ordered the city to be totally destroyed and renamed. It was then called Aelia Capitolina, and Israel was renamed to Palestine, which comes from the word Philistines. This was done in an attempt to eradicate any association of Jerusalem and Israel with the Jews. After some two centuries without walls, new walls were erected around the city, probably during the reign of Emperor Diocletian, sometime between 289 AD and the turn of the century. The walls were then extensively renewed later on by the Empress Aelia Eudoxia during her banishment to Jerusalem in around 443 to 460 AD. It should be mentioned, however, that the original walls that existed during the time of Christ were never completely destroyed. Therefore, some of the walls that exist today are from this time period. Newer walls have been built upon them, but parts of the original walls, as mentioned, are from the time of Christ. A good example of this is part of the Western Wall, or also known as the Wailing Wall. The walls of Jerusalem would then be rebuilt and torn down until the time of Suleiman the Magnificent arrived on the scene in the 1500s. The city walls that exist today were built in the 16th century under Suleiman the Magnificent. He decided to rebuild the city walls on much of the remains of the ancient walls that already existed. They were completed in 1538 and are the walls of the city today. And you will notice in these walls that about halfway up, the walls kind of change. The lower part is generally the older part of the walls. And then the new part, or the part that you can see usually with smaller stones and sometimes haphazardly laid, is the newer part. Now the walls of Jerusalem today are glorious and majestic. We'll take a look at each section of the city walls now. We'll start with the western city wall side and then see the northern, eastern, and southern sides of the city walls. Along the way, we'll highlight the city gates and a few outstanding places. In another video, we'll talk about the history and show you in more detail each city gate that exists today, along with a few that existed in the time of Jesus that no longer exist. The western side of the walls of Jerusalem are spectacular in beauty. One notable place along this wall is the believed place where Christ was tried and condemned to crucifixion. Herod's palace was located just inside this wall, and it's believed Pilate was using it when Christ was brought before him. The Jaffa Gate is also on this side of the wall. It's the largest and one of the most used gates of the city. It was built by Suleiman the Magnificent in 1538. It marked the end of the highway that led from Jaffa or the Joppa port on the Mediterranean Ocean to Jerusalem. A large opening in the wall was made right beside the original gate that still exists today. In 1898, when Kaiser Wilhelm II of Germany visited Jerusalem, the ruling Ottoman Turks opened it up so the German emperor would not have to dismount his carriage to enter the city. Today, this opening allows cars to enter the old city between Jaffa Gate and the City of David. This gate leads into the Christian and Armenian quarters of the old city. The northern city wall section is the longest and has the most gates. This side of the wall was always the weakest side to protect because the terrain slopes uphill from here. For this reason, most of the battles that were fought took place on this side. It was here that the Romans entered to conquer Jerusalem in 70 AD. The first gate in the section of this wall is the New Gate. It carries this name because it was constructed in 1898 and is the newest gate. It was built with permission of Sultan Abdul Hamid II and is located near the northwestern corner of the city. It leads into the Christian quarter. The next gate is the Damascus Gate. It is one of the busiest and certainly the most magnificent of all Jerusalem's gates. The gate consists of one large center gate originally intended for use by persons of high station or high prominence, and two smaller side entrances for the common people. It's the main entrance into the Muslim quarter of the city today. Just after the Damascus Gate is Zedekiah's Cave, or also known as Solomon's Quarries. This is a massive underground cave that was used for quarrying large limestones used in the walls of Jerusalem. It encompasses 5 acres, or 2.5 hectares, that runs the length of 5 city blocks under the Muslim quarter of the old city of Jerusalem. Next is Herod's Gate. It connects the Muslim quarter inside the old city to a Palestinian neighborhood just inside. It is a short distance to the east of the Damascus Gate. The eastern wall section of the old city is quite majestic and faces the Mount of Olives, which rises up, and the Kidron Valley, which falls below it. The Temple Mount, where the temple was once located, shares part of this side of the wall. The Lion's Gate is located in this section of the wall. The entrance also leads to the famous Via Dolorosa. Near the gate's crest are 4 figures of lions, 2 on the left and 2 on the right. Legend has it that Sultan Suleiman placed the figures there because he believed that if he did not construct a wall around Jerusalem, he would be killed by lions. Israeli paratroopers famously stormed through this gate during the Six-Day War to conquer the Temple Mount, after which they unfurled the Israeli flag above the old city. The Eastern Gate, also known as the Golden Gate, was the main entrance to the original temple during the time of Jesus. Jesus used this gate regularly when he was in Jerusalem to teach on the Temple Mount area. Now, this Eastern Gate has played a significant role in the Old Testament and even in the New Testament, and it will play, according to many scholars, an important role in prophesied future events as well. Now, during the time of Christ, there was a bridge that was from here of the Eastern Gate, and it would span over the Kidron Valley and wind up over towards the Mount of Olives. That way, people didn't have to go down the Kidron Valley and back up. So right here, right directly under this gate, this is a newer gate, about 500 years old, but right directly under it, it has been found was the original gate. So Christ would have walked right through here on a regular basis, especially the last week of his ministry. He would come back and forth, staying on the Mount of Olives, and then ministering right here on the Temple Mount. So this plays a real key role in the Bible. According to Jewish tradition, the Messiah will enter Jerusalem through this gate when he returns. To prevent this, the Muslims sealed the gate during the rule of Suleiman and built a cemetery by it. Of course, we know that Jesus the Messiah already entered through this gate, and when he returns, no cemetery will stop him from re-entering this gate. The southern wall section of the Old City has some significant places along it. The most notable is the Southern Steps area. This was the main entrance to the Temple Mount during the time of Christ, and it is what connected the city of David to the Temple Mount. Right here, this group of people, can you say hi?
Hi.
They are sitting on the very stairs. They are called the Rabbi Stairs that went up to the Temple Mount during Christ's time. And these are the very stairs upon which Christ would have walked, upon which he would have taught his disciples, and also upon which the Apostle Paul would have learned under Gamaliel, one of the most famous rabbis in Jerusalem and in the Apostle Paul's time. Today, all of the original gates from the southern stairs have been closed off. There was no doubt that Jesus would have used these stairs and taught his disciples here as well. There are also hundreds of mikvahs, which are Jewish purification pools, by these stairs that were used for purification purposes and likely used as well at Pentecost for the 3,000 that were saved and then got baptized. The Dung Gate is located along this section of the wall and is the closest in proximity to the Western Wall or the Wailing Wall, which is in the Jewish quarter of the Old City of Jerusalem. The gate received its name because refuse or trash was hauled out of the city through this gate. Just up from the Dung Gate is the Zion Gate. It was one of the main gates used by the Israeli Defense Forces in 1967 to enter and capture the Old City. The stones surrounding the gate are still marked by weapons of fire, and you can see the holes and all these damaged parts in this gate area. Now, what can we learn as a faith lesson from the history of Jerusalem and its walls and gates? Well, according to many passages in the Bible, God still has a plan for the Jews. Scripture contains many prophecies about how God would bring them back to their homeland after being scattered for thousands of years. He also says that during the Great Tribulation period that many, if not most of them, will recognize that Jesus is indeed their Messiah and turn to him in repentance. Amazingly, we see the first prophecy fulfilled in that the Jews return to their homeland and now have their own country. There have been many civilizations that have occupied the Holy Land, but God has fulfilled prophecy in bringing the Jews back to their homeland today. The stones here cry out that God's word is true and is verifiable through the fulfillment of these prophecies. There is a statement found in the southern stair area of the Temple Mount that summarizes the history and walls of this magnificent chosen city. Here's this wonderful phrase, and listen to it carefully. The Jerusalem stone, so resilient and supple, bows to the transient follies of humankind, bearing a testimony like 100 witnesses, and yet remains silent. This is the place, this is the city, where God has decided to dwell in a special way. It's also the place where he will return to in power and great glory at his second coming. And it will be the place from which he will reign during the millennial reign of Christ on this earth after the Great Tribulation period and before the destruction of the current heavens and earth and the creation of new heavens and earth. If God has fulfilled countless prophecies regarding Jerusalem, the Jewish nation, Christ's first coming, and the regathering of Israel back to her homeland, then we can rest assured that every other prophecy in the Bible will be fulfilled as well. Therefore, we should be living lives that are pleasing to the Lord and awaiting His return. Well, I hope that you have found this talk and this video helpful. Hope you found it enlightening. So thank you for watching, and may God bless you.